Welcome to the Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160 with your host, Dr. Bob Hedaya. Sit back, relax, listen, and learn about a unique approach to mental health. And now, here's your host of the Whole Psychiatry Hour, Dr. Bob Hedaya.
Welcome, folks. It's my pleasure to be with you this morning. I'm Dr. Bob Hedaya, your host on the Whole Psychiatry Hour. We're here every Sunday at 11 a.m., 1160 at 11, during which time we explore the many facets of life that affect your mental health or the mental health of someone you care about. So here we are, December. The days are dark, the nights are cold. We sit and we shiver while winter takes hold. We ache for the warmth, we pine for the light. Yet for now, spring's just a dream. The warm sunlight is yet unseen. In recognition of these dark winter days and the holiday blues that so many people feel, today on the Whole Psychiatry Hour, we will be most fortunate to talk with a friend and colleague, Dr. Norman Rosenthal, the psychiatrist who first identified and then developed the treatment for seasonal depression. He will tell us about it and what you can do to combat the effect of these dark winter days. But first, for those of you who are listening for the first time, I'd like to introduce myself and the whole psychiatry concept. I'm a psychiatrist and a psychopharmacologist in clinical practice in Chevy Chase, Maryland. I'm the author of two books, Understanding Biological Psychiatry, as well as the Antidepressant Survival Program. I'm a clinical professor of psychiatry at Georgetown University and founder of the National Center for Whole Psychiatry, also in Chevy Chase, Maryland. So you may be wondering, what is whole psychiatry? Whole psychiatry is a way of looking at mental health that incorporates all of the different factors that can affect mental health into the treatment. In whole psychiatry, we think outside the box, and this is needed because the response rates to most for most psychiatric conditions are marginal. So, for example, with depression, the response rate, the complete full recovery rate in depression is roughly about a third, and a third of people get a partial response, and about a third of people end up having no response, and often multiple medications are needed. So in the whole psychiatry approach, we like to look at other things that may be affecting mental health, things for which there is a great deal of scientific evidence. So we look at the immune system, hormones, genetics, diet, nutrition, gastrointestinal tract, lifestyle, spirituality, the effect of spaces and places we live in and work in, environmental factors, chemical toxins, culture, politics, economics, family structure. In today's program, we will look at one such environmental factor, the seasons of the year, and the very profound influence that they can have on your body and your mind. On a practical level, what does this mean? Well, I think back to a case of a woman I will call Emily. Emily is a professional woman who was employed by a large international firm. She was in her mid-30s when I first saw her, and she had never been married. And she came to me because of a depression that was induced by rejection. Whenever things would go bad in her relationships, she would go into a nearly debilitating depression lasting weeks to months. Back in those days, I was treating people as most psychiatrists do with medication and therapy. And so with a combination of medication and therapy, Emily's depression cleared up very nicely. And I began to see her about once or twice a year. In about the 10th year of our relationship, Emily complained to me about her arthritis. And she felt it was caused by candida, a yeast. And this, of course, is worsened by diet. Frankly, I thought it was very unlikely, but she convinced me to have her tested for yeast and food allergies, and I did. And as it turned out, when Emily eliminated dairy products from her diet, her arthritis symptoms cleared completely. Of course, I was astounded. That's when I started to consider the link between diet and mental health problems. Where is the link to her mental health? Well, this is very interesting. It turns out that Emily had a growing anxiety that she would become disabled by her arthritis. Now the anxiety was gone, And had she gone the normal route of just psychotherapy and medication, she might have talked about her fears of disability, and perhaps she would have been given some type of anti-anxiety medication or even be referred to a rheumatologist who might have put her on some anti-inflammatory medication. So here we see an example of where looking and thinking outside of the box offers solutions to some mental health problems. The point is, of course, that most of the chronic diseases we suffer from, including mental health problems, have their roots in all of the systems we talk about in whole psychiatry, the immune system, the hormones, the gut, the environment, culture, etc. Emily's case is very instructive. So today, we have a guest, Dr. Norman Rosenthal, who himself thinks out of the box. In fact, he's a psychiatrist, so I might say he shrinks out of the box. Well, we're going to talk with him, my distinguished guest, respected colleague, and very good friend, about seasonal depression. Dr. Norman Rosenthal is best known as the psychiatrist and scientist who first described seasonal affective disorder, SAD, winter depression, and he pioneered the use of light therapy in its treatment. Dr. Rosenthal has had a long and distinguished career as a National Institute of Mental Health researcher, is the author of over 200 scholarly publications, has written several books, including the book Winter Blues, Seasonal Affective Disorder, What It Is and How to Overcome It. Dr. Rosenthal is with us today. Welcome, Dr. Rosenthal.
Great to be here, Dr. Hedaya.
Dr. Rosenthal, a quick question before we get to the break. What are the symptoms of seasonal affective disorder, or SAD?
Well, people with seasonal affective disorder each year, as the days get short and dark, get a very predictable series of symptoms, including low energy, difficulty waking up in the morning, overeating, especially sweets and starches, and they gain weight. They withdraw from friends, from family. They have a hard time concentrating and working. And as you can imagine, all this becomes depressing, and they feel symptoms of depression, sadness, and also anxiety.
So it's a very common disorder, and it's a type of depression. We're listening to The Whole Psychiatry on WMET 1160. We're talking with Dr. Norman Rosenthal about seasonal depression. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about the frequency of seasonal depression, how to know if you have it, how to treat it, what to do with your diet, your lifestyle, and more on The Whole Psychiatry Hour, WMET 1160 AM.
If getting life insurance is on your things to do list, now you can get a term life policy in just 10 minutes. 10 minutes to get up to $150,000 of term life insurance if you qualify through Jefferson National Life Insurance Company. Call now for a free quote, 1-866-612-3600. With Jefferson National, there's no medical exam, no long forms, and no agent will visit you. Just complete a short application over the phone. If you qualify, your coverage starts right away. That's instant term life coverage in one simple call. Call Jefferson National at 1-866-612-3600. Getting life insurance has never been easier to cross off your list. Contains limitations. Based in Dallas, Texas, Jefferson National issues term life under form number JNLSEL03 or a state variation. Call Jefferson National now. 1-866-612-3600. That's 1-866-612-3600.
Attention men and women suffering from hair loss. Now, with Avacor, a world leader in hair regrowth, you don't have to be bald, even if you have a family history of hair loss. Here's Dr. Mark Goodman, board-certified dermatologist.
The main reason for thinning hair and baldness is hereditary hair loss. Just because there is a family history of hair loss doesn't mean you have to suffer. Avacor is specially formulated to reverse hereditary hair loss and regrow new healthy hair. Our formula targets the hair follicle to effectively stop hair loss and stimulate new hair growth. Before you consider expensive transplant surgery, remember, Avacor is FDA approved to regrow new healthy hair for men and women.
We're giving away a free month of Avacor with all of today's orders. Call 800-449-8917. That's 800-449-8917. Satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. Call 800-449-8917. That's 800-449-8917.
You put your keys between your knuckles. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. You lock the door behind you, maybe twice. Now you feel safe. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not eating right, if you're not active, or if you smoke, you're putting yourself at risk for disease. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
Talk Radio, WMET 1160, is your station for intelligent talk and a little bit of wackiness. Greaseman gets you started in the morning at 6, followed by Tony Snow at 9, J.T. Ballard at noon, G. Gordon Liddy at 2, Linda Chavez on your drive home, the Bauer and Rose Show in the evenings, and Alan Combs Late Nights. Your station, for talk. WMET 1160 and online at WMET1160.com.
This is the Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160. Here again is your host, Dr. Bob Hedaya.
Welcome back to the Whole Psychiatry Hour at WMET Talk Radio 1160. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Hedaya. We're talking with Dr. Norman Rosenthal about seasonal depression, or SAD, S-A-D. Dr. Rosenthal, how did you first become aware of SAD, or seasonal depression?
Well, I came myself from South Africa to New York City to do my psychiatric residency, and I felt the changes in myself as the winter came on. I began to slow down and was less able to juggle all the things that a resident has to juggle, and I kind of hung in through the winter, and as the spring came, things got easier. And this happened for 3 cycles, and I thought, gee, this never happened in South Africa, which is, of course, much closer to the equator. And then I came to the NIMH, the National Institute of Mental Health, and I was working with a group that was involved in cycles and light and rhythms and so on and so forth. And at that point, we came across a patient, a scientist himself, who had noticed a very marked seasonal change in his moods, and he had speculated that it was related to the light. And that was the beginning, my own personal experience coupled with his clinical anecdote, all fused together with my colleagues at the NIH. We put the story together, and that became what we now call seasonal affective disorder.
Well, that's very fortunate for us that you took that lead and ran with the ball. You know, I had an experience myself when I went into practice in 1983. I had been at Georgetown, and then I got an office in Silver Spring, Maryland, and it was a 12-by-12 office, which I felt was pretty big, but it had no windows. And I was working long, long hours. And what I noticed after a year or two was that for lunch, I would ask my secretary to go out and get cookies, you know, these Chinese fortune cookies, you know. And I started out with one, and then I'd say, hey, you know, Joanne, why don't you get me 2? And, hey, Joanne, why don't you get me 3? And I didn't really make the connection till later on that it was the light deprivation, because I was working, say, you know, really 8 in the morning till often 8 o'clock at night. And so my question is, can SAD be induced by light deprivation in most people, or what percent of people can it be induced in?
Oh, sure. As I mentioned in Winter Blues, there are 3 main factors that account for SAD. The first is genetic. Some people are more susceptible than others. The second is light deprivation, and the third is stress. So somebody might be genetically vulnerable, but if they get lots of light and not much stress, they might be okay. But juggle those factors around, and the same person could get easily the symptoms of SAD or cookie craving, as you describe.
Right. So let me ask you, what would you say the frequency of SAD is in the Washington metro area?
We've estimated the SAD frequency at about 5%. But remember, for every case of full-fledged SAD, you've probably got 3 cases of what we call the winter blues. That is, you don't have such bad symptoms that you might want to go to the doctor, but you do feel less productive, less creative, you accomplish less during the winter time, and we call that the winter blues. And so I would say there's about 5% of SAD and 15% of the winter blues in the Washington area. So 1 in 5 people is affected by the lack of light.
That's very high. That's very high. I think that nearly everyone is affected to some degree, right?
Some people, you know, love the winter. And every time I'm on the radio on a call-in show, people will call in and say, I've just got the opposite. I love the winter. I hate the summer. So we are all wired differently. Mm-hmm. But it is quite common to have trouble with the winter.
Now, with such a high frequency of SAD, say in the Washington area, why is it that most people are not getting treated? Why is SAD under-recognized and under-treated?
It's a great question. One reason, I think, is that the common treatment for SAD has been light therapy, exposing oneself to bright light. We can talk more about that presently. But light therapy is not very lucrative. Nobody has much money to be made by selling light boxes. It can't be patented in a way. So it's not like pharmaceuticals that are much more profitable. And I think that this has kept industry out of educating doctors, which is the way in which a lot of doctors learn about illnesses and their treatments. So I think that this major factor, which is the pharmaceutical education of physicians, has been missing from the SAD field.
That makes a lot of sense, because the finances are often what holds back a lot of research. I know the drug companies certainly have plenty of financial resources, even more than NIMH does at this point. How can a person know if their depression, which shows up around, say, let's say Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, how can a person know whether it's a light deprivation phenomenon or maybe conditioning related to holiday issues and family issues, et cetera? Can that be separated out?
Well, SAD is very different from the holiday blues. The holiday blues really occur, but they usually last just a couple of weeks, maybe around Thanksgiving, maybe around Christmas, when you're sad because maybe loved ones aren't there, or you don't have enough money to celebrate the holidays as you'd like to, or you're lonely and other people have lots of company and there are ways of comparing and envying that comes up at the holidays. So that's one thing. It's a short-lived thing. But sad, on the other hand, lasts on average about 5 months. It starts in October. It goes all the way through till March or April. And it's got this cluster of biological features that really are its hallmark, the oversleeping, overeating, difficulty waking, low energy. If you've got those symptoms and you look back year after year and you think that you've had them last Christmas, last Thanksgiving, and so on and so forth, chances are you have SAD and not just the holiday blues.
Now, having known you, our relationship goes back to, I think, 1983. Having known you all these years, of course, I've been up on the light therapy, and I've seen that some people with SAD have to actually start their light as early as August. Have you had that experience?
Indeed, I have. And what happens between late June, which is the summer solstice, the longest day of the year, and August, is that you're losing about a half an hour of light in the morning. And for some people, that half an hour of morning light between, say, 5:30 and 6, because 5:30 is dawn at the solstice, and about 6 o'clock or 6:15 would be dawn around mid to late August. That 30 to 45 minutes for some people appears to be crucial. So if you're one of those people out there who has trouble starting in August, you might want to consider using your light therapy very early in the morning.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Now, this is kind of a side issue, but do blind people suffer from SAD at a higher rate, or people, say, with macular degeneration? Are they more vulnerable?
Blind people certainly can suffer, and I've had cases of people who have not had SAD until they've had some trouble or injury to their eye. Trauma to the eye with a cataract development or some genetic illness that just kind of pops out in adolescence and involves the eyes. And because the light isn't coming through to the brain, they're now developing SAD that they hadn't had before.
So now I think back to when my kids were adolescents, and I remember particularly one of my kids, whose name I won't mention. I remember having to peel him out of the bed in the morning during the, I think it was the winters. And I'm wondering about children, young children, and of course adolescents. Have you seen SAD or seasonal depression in that those age groups?
We've actually surveyed middle and high school children in the Maryland area over here, and we find that by the time they reach their senior year of high school, their prevalence of SAD is pretty much the same as the adult population, namely 5%. One interesting feature is that puberty seems to trigger SAD in girls but not in boys, and it's one of the several links that suggest that the female sex hormones have got something to do with sensitizing the brain to changes in environmental light.
We're talking with Dr. Norman Rosenthal, author of Winter Blues, about seasonal depression on WMET, 1160 AM. Dr. Rosenthal, would you say that the symptomatology is the same in all age groups for SAD?
Not really, because I think that when you're talking about children and adolescents, they have a hard time really understanding that the changes are occurring within themselves. It's much easier for them to see it as the world outside changing. Parents are becoming too strict. They're being too naggy about the homework. Teachers are becoming unreasonable. Everybody's giving them a hard time. That tends to be the way children and especially adolescents can process their symptoms.
Would they tend to, children, let's say, would children tend to be more irritable then?
Yes, irritability is a big symptom, and especially in children, because you're asking them to do things that they just feel they can't do and often respond with irritability.
So now this constellation and the overeating and oversleeping and trouble with energy and focus, et cetera, you know, a lot of times, as you know, there's atypical or type of depression, which in some studies is linked to bipolar, a manic depressive disorder. Is there any link between seasonal depression and bipolar disorder?
A fair number of people with SAD are, quotes, bipolar. What that really means is that in the summertime, when they come out of their winter depression, they are extra energetic, extra invigorated. They may talk fast. Their ideas may race. They may need very little sleep. But for most people, this is not really a serious problem, which can happen in manic patients where their extra energy kind of runs out of control and they do reckless things, spend too much money or indulge in indiscretions and so on and so forth. This doesn't usually happen in the SAD population.
So you say most people with SAD, seasonal depression, are not at higher risk for bipolar disorder. A small percentage would be at higher risk for a seasonal depression that might, a seasonal mania, let's say, or low-grade mania that might show up in the spring.
Yes, mania itself is rare in SAD.
Okay. And would you say that women suffer about twice as often as men of SAD?
Actually, it's more like three times as often. There's a very strong female preponderance, and again, we think it's something to do with the sex hormones making a woman's brain sensitive.
Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, as I mentioned, the onset of puberty is associated with an increase in prevalence. Likewise, at the other end of the reproductive cycle, when women become menopausal, they're less seasonal, or shall I say, during the reproductive years, women are much more seasonal than men. But after the menopause, that flattens out, that evens out, again suggesting that, you know, when the sex hormones aren't coming into play, there's less seasonality.
Do we know what the mechanism, or do we have speculation about how the female hormones might be playing into this?
There is some speculation, because certainly in animals, for example, cattle or sheep, these animals have a seasonal cycle of reproduction. That is that they reproduce at certain times of the year that are going to confer an advantage to their newborn, so that they're born in the spring and they're most likely to survive. And there is a connection between the reproductive cycle and the hormone melatonin, which is secreted at night by the pineal gland, both in animals and in humans. And these hormones play off of each other. And so that's the speculated connection.
So it sounds like you're thinking about melatonin, and are you thinking about estrogen as a primary hormone or progesterone or a combination of the three?
Yes, I think that the effects of melatonin on estrogen are well documented. So I think that that would be a likely pathway a connection.
Okay. So how specifically does melatonin affect the hormones? How does thyroid affect the SAD frequency? Why does a woman clear her risk, reduce for SAD after menopause? All of these questions. And, of course, what to do about SAD. We're going to be addressing all of these things when we return on WMET 1160 on the Whole Psychiatry Hour with Dr. Norman Rosenthal.
Thank you. How much would you pay for valuable news and information that could help you get ahead in business, invest smarter, increase your income, and lower your taxes? How about 38 cents a day? That's all it costs to get the Wall Street Journal. Imagine 8 weeks free delivery for 50% off the regular subscription rate. Millions of readers rely on the Wall Street Journal for the important business news and in-depth feature reporting they need on investments, taxes, new technologies, marketing strategies, and more. The Wall Street Journal puts it all within your reach. Subscribe now and get 8 weeks of the Wall Street Journal for only 38 cents a day. That's 50% off the regular rate. This limited time offer is available to new subscribers in the continental U.S. only.
Call now, 800-431-7700. That's 800-431-7700 for the Wall Street Journal, Adventures in Capitalism.
Homeowners, if your resolution for 2006 is to save more money, how about reducing your mortgage payment up to 35%? It's easy with Quicken Loans. Just write down this number, 800-316-5711. Quicken Loans can show you how to cut your mortgage payment up to 35% so you can make your money work harder, like paying off high-interest credit card bills, affording home improvements, or increasing your retirement savings. Just call 800-316-5711. With over 150 exclusive loan products, the mortgage experts at Quicken Loans have something for you. This could be the most valuable call you make all year. Find out how you can cut your monthly mortgage payment up to 35%. Call Quicken Loans now at 800-316-5711. 800-316-5711. Quicken Loans, America's home loan experts. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. Call 800-316-5711.
Hi, this is Joe Perry.
And Steven Tyler of Aerosmith for Red. You know, it's okay to rock and roll and party down. Just don't get in that 2,000-pound bullet when you're done and cocked. And please don't drink and drive.
Someone that jaded you.
A reminder that friends don't let friends drive drunk. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council, U.S. Department of Transportation, National Association of Broadcasters, and RAD.
The only place in Washington to hear the voices of Fox Radio. Talk Radio, WMET 1160, your station for Tony Snow. Weekday mornings, 9 to noon. Alan Combs, late nights from 10 to 1. Grease Man in the morning. J.D. Ballard at noon. G. Gordon Liddy at 2. Linda Chavez at 4. And Bauer and Rose at 6. Intelligent talk with a splash of grease. Talk Radio, WMET 1160. Online at WMET1160.com.
Welcome back to the Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160. Here again is your host, Dr. Bob Hedaya.
Welcome back to the Whole Psychiatry Hour at WMET Talk Radio 1160. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Hedaya, MD, and we're privileged to be talking today with Dr. Norman Rosenthal, the psychiatrist who pioneered the research and treatment of seasonal depression. Dr. Rosenthal, if anyone would like to contact you, how can they do that?
They can check me out on my website, and that's www.normanrosenthal.com, and that will give them a link to how to email me.
Great, great. Now, can you, for the audience, give us a story of a patient that comes to mind? Of course, you can protect their identity, but to bring this to life.
Well, one of the very first patients that I do mention in the book, whom I call Bridget, really had done a lot of thinking about her problem. She had lived at different latitudes, and when she lived further north, the depressed symptoms would come on earlier and they would go deeper, and then in the summer she would kind of go higher. And then when she moved further south, the depressed symptoms would come on later and the summer highs would not be as high and the winter lows would not be as low. So she'd kind of put some of this together, and she had a great quote. She said, "I should have been a bear because bears are allowed to hibernate. Humans are not. Humans are expected to get up, get the kids off to school, and do 100 chores. And when all you want to do is to just curl up and be left alone, that is depressing just even to think about, let alone to do." And interestingly enough, very recently there was a study on hibernating hamsters. And they took these hibernating hamsters and they put them through various tests that they used to look for models of depression in animals. For example, they force the animal to swim around and see how long it would swim for. And these hibernating hamsters behaved as though they were depressed. And when they treated them with antidepressants, it reversed these depressive-type behaviors. So it turns out that Bridget was really correct, that if you take a creature that is trying to hibernate and force that creature into doing active things, that's a kind of depressing thing right there.
So that actually would explain why the link between the incidence of seasonal depression and latitude is not tight in some cultures as it is in other cultures, right? So that our culture, because we're expected to produce and we don't slow down in the winter, or at least we're expected not to slow down, that our culture may actually be fostering seasonal depression or higher incidence of seasonal depression.
Yes, it could be that once upon a time, people who showed a lot of seasonality could have been at an advantage because there are a lot of elements of seasonal affective disorder which look like energy conservation. People aren't moving around much, they're eating a lot, they're storing bodily fat. It looks almost as though this is a way of storing calories when there's very little food around. What happens nowadays, of course, is that there's tons of food around. We just finished with the holidays and we all have these cookies and candies and things lying around. So there's lots of food, and being overweight is not a prized quality in our current culture. So it's right now what might have once upon a time been an advantage is considered nothing but a liability.
Hmm. We're talking with Dr. Norman Rosenthal, author of Winter Blues About Seasonal Depression on WMET, 1160 AM. Dr. Rosenthal, we've talked about melatonin, we've talked about estrogen, we've talked about progesterone and the links, particularly melatonin and estrogen. What about thyroid hormones? I'm aware of the literature that shows a seasonal change in thyroid hormone function and levels. Have you
Yes, I'm happy to talk about thyroid, and it is obviously a hugely important hormone, but I don't want to totally let go of melatonin because there's still some really intriguing mysteries that have been explored with some, you know, fascinating results. But just to speak to your point, of course we know that thyroid is involved in metabolism and in keeping people active and energized and so on and so forth. There is some data that thyroid function may be a little low in many people with SAD.
Okay. So tell me a little bit more about melatonin. You sound like you've got some things you want to mention.
Right. Well, one thing to think about, when we think about light, we think that light enables us to see things, which it certainly does. What emerged through this whole melatonin and SAD story is that light does a lot more than just enable us to see. For example, light suppresses the hormone melatonin, and light, of course, reverses the symptoms of seasonal affective disorder. And right from the very beginning, the question has arisen as to whether the one might have something to do with the other. The duration of melatonin secretion at night is what tells an animal what season of the year is this. In a long winter night, there's a long duration of melatonin in a sheep or a goat, for example. In a short winter night, there's a short duration of melatonin, and that is what tells the animal whether it's winter or summer and sets off a cascade of physiological behaviors, including reproduction or coat color changes or what have you. So really the question was this also important in humans? Well, what my colleagues and I at the NIMH showed is that the effects of artificial light override these seasonal influences in regular folks, but not in people with seasonal affective disorder. People with seasonal affective disorder still show the changes in duration of melatonin, just like our livestock do. And what this might mean is that people with SAD may have a higher threshold for perceiving the light than regular folks, so that regular artificial light doesn't get registered as a seasonal change. You have to make the light extra bright in order for the person with SAD to realize whether it's winter or summer.
That's fascinating. That's fascinating. We're talking with Dr. Norman Rosenthal on WMET 1160 AM, the Whole Psychiatry Hour, about seasonal depression. Now, let's cover this. There's really so much to cover here. How about the fact that most people that work in office buildings today work in buildings that don't have windows? The windows are covered with energy-efficient coatings. Their light intake is less. Is that a big factor?
It is a big factor, and I was interested in your office in Silver Spring where you went out for the cookies, that I wondered if it was a dark office, if it didn't have large windows.
No windows. No windows at all.
Well, that really is a bad place for anybody who has any sensitivity to this problem at all, because the lack of good quality light is a big factor in people's productivity, in people's mood, in the workplace. And many is the person who has taken one of their light fixtures or light boxes into the workplace just to make sure that they don't get down at work.
That makes a lot of sense. I bet there are a lot of people now who carry or have extra boxes in the office. So let's talk about I'd like to talk about the main treatment for SAD, which is light. And then there are, of course, these other treatments that we definitely want to get to, other aspects of treatment. So first of all, what's the standard protocol for treating someone with seasonal affective disorder or winter depression?
Well, firstly, you need a light box or a light fixture. What is that? It is just a structure, perhaps 1.5 feet by 2 feet, a metal structure which contains fluorescent light bulbs behind a plastic diffusing screen.
Well, can I make one of these at home?
You can, but usually it doesn't really work out because it's much trickier than it seems, and the commercially available ones are actually much better.
They're measured for light intensity.
They don't
for
have
lux.
Flicker. They measure the intensity. They're electrically safe. If you're very handy, of course, you can do it. In practice, most people do well with a pre-made light fixture. In any event, so it's not really that the light is a special color or a special quality. It doesn't have to be full spectrum. It doesn't have to be, quotes, grow light or anything like that. It's just that a light box packs a lot of light in one place. You need to sit in front of it for a period of time each day. That varies from person to person and with the time of year. It can be as little as 15 or 20 minutes. It can be as long as an hour and a half. Mornings are usually the best, and usually the earlier the better, but people can also get benefit from using it later on in the day as well.
We're talking with Dr. Norman Rosenthal, author of Winter Blues on WMET 1160 AM about seasonal depression. Dr. Rosenthal, how quickly can someone expect to get results from a light box?
Usually within 2 to 4 days. Some people may take a week. But remember, if you're not getting your expected results, there are ways to troubleshoot it. And in the book, I have a whole section on troubleshooting if the light doesn't seem to be working. Use it for longer, move it earlier, move the box closer. Don't get one of these tiny little rinky-dink lights. They're probably not as good as the bigger ones. There are tons of things you can do, but if you're doing it right, you should get an effect within a week or two.
Oh, that's very quick. That's very quick, and that's satisfying. And then if you're not getting an effect, you can raise the amount of light. We're talking with Dr. Norman Rosenthal about seasonal depression, and when we come back on WMET 1160 AM, on the Whole Psychiatry Hour, we're going to talk about how to use your light box and what are the alternative therapies that you can use to maximize the benefit you get for your light therapy. This is Dr. Hedaya on the Whole Psychiatry Hour.
The following is an urgent message for all inventors. Who cashed in on your last great idea? Do you have another invention? Do you need a patent? Then you need InventTech.
Everyone laughed at my pot that cooked and drained pasta. If I had the patent, I'd be rich.
Snap your fingers. Turn on the light. That was my idea. But I never thought to get a patent.
Don't let this happen to you. You may have a great idea, but unless you protect it, anyone can take it and keep the profits. That's why you need to call InventTech now. We'll send you a free inventor's kit, and you'll receive our free video or DVD with your confidential submission. Call 1-800-326-5757.
Cleaning with citrus was my little secret. I never patented it. Boy, was that dumb.
Don't let someone else cash in on your great idea. Call Inventech now for a free inventor's kit. Call 1-800-326-5757. Call 1-800-326-5757.
Attention men and women suffering from hair loss. Now, with Avacor, a world leader in hair regrowth, you don't have to be bald, even if you have a family history of hair loss. Here's Dr. Mark Goodman, board-certified dermatologist.
The main reason for thinning hair and baldness is hereditary hair loss. Just because there is a family history of hair loss doesn't mean you have to suffer. Avacor is specially formulated to reverse hereditary hair loss and regrow new healthy hair. Our formula targets the hair follicle to effectively stop hair loss and stimulate new hair growth. Before you consider expensive transplant surgery, remember, Avacor is FDA approved to regrow new healthy hair for men and women.
We're giving away a free month of Avacor with all of today's orders. Call 800-449-8917. That's 800-449-8917. Satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. Call 800-449-8917. That's 800-449-8917.
Your station for talk, WMET, 1160.
Every day the chances of becoming a victim of mercury poisoning increase. Mercury poisoning may cause neurological damage that impairs learning, vision, and memory. And mercury itself has become part of our everyday lives, absorbed by certain fish, taken into our bodies, and passed on to our children like a common cold. But you can stop this. Log on to earthshare.org and find out how. A public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
Tune in. Log on. Stay connected. From anywhere in the world. Talk radio. WMET 1160. Your station for talk. Is online at WMET1160.com. Get caught up on the latest news. Check out the program schedule. Post your comments to the WMET blog. And whether you're sitting in the office or you're on the road on business, you can listen live to Grease Man, Tony Snow, J.D. Ballard, G. Gordon Liddy, Linda Chavez, and Bauer and Rose. It's all online at WMET1160.com.
We're back with the Whole Psychiatry Hour on WMET 1160. Here once again is your host, Dr. Bob Hedaya.
Welcome back to the Whole Psychiatry Hour at WMET Talk Radio 1160 AM. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Hedaya, MD. Want to remind you that you can reach me at www.wholepsych, that's W-H-O-L-E, capital P-S-Y-C-H.com. And remember, you can listen to this discussion again or our previous discussions on WMET1160.com or on my website, which I just mentioned. Our goal on the Whole Psychiatry Hour is to open your mind to new ways of looking at mental health problems. And today, we're learning about seasonal depression with Dr. Norman Rosenthal, who can be contacted via his website, www.normanrosenthal.com. Dr. Rosenthal, what percentage of people using light therapy who have SAD can expect full recovery with just light therapy alone?
I would say that if you use the light properly, you could 60% could expect full recovery.
That's pretty significant.
If you use it properly, what that might mean is that you might need to use it more duration than you want per day or earlier than you want. So in practice, not everybody can use it as much as they'd like, which is why it's great that we've got all these other treatments.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's the longest that you've seen someone need an hour and a half of light per day, 2 hours?
Usually most people aren't willing to use it for more than 2 hours per day. Some people have the lights on all day if they're very severe. But for most people, an hour and a half is probably as much as they're willing to do.
Now, do you need to look at the light? I remember reading a study, I think it was frogs, where they put light on the frog's knees or something, and they seem to have changes in hormone levels.
You need to be facing the light. You don't need to be staring at the light. Your eyes need to be open, and you need to be facing the light. Right now, I just quickly want to mention something really important, and that is the value of having a light come on in your bedroom before you wake up in the morning. That can be via a special device called a dawn simulator that turns that light on gradually, and it's available from a number of the manufacturers that sell light boxes. And incidentally, both my book and my website give some of the more reputable light light box light fixture providers. So you can turn the light on gradually with the Dawn Simulator, but a $10 timer might do just as well, turned on 20 to 30 minutes before wake-up time in the morning. Waking up in an illuminated room is a very good thing for people with this problem.
And so morning light is somewhat better than afternoon or evening light, right?
Yes, but the evening light is valuable in its own right.
Now, this is a little bit of an aside, but their recent meta-analysis showed that light therapy is useful for other types of depression as well. Do you agree with that, and do you have any idea of why that would be so?
Well, yes, I do agree with it. I think it's very understudied for reasons that we discussed. There's no funding to study it. But we've done work with light therapy in SAD, and we have found that light therapy affects serotonin and norepinephrine in the brain. These, of course, are neurotransmitters that are involved in depression. And so anything that's going to affect the same neurotransmitters that are involved in depression in general, in SAD, will also perhaps benefit from if they're non-seasonal.
That makes complete sense. We're talking with Dr. Norman Rosenthal on the Whole Psychiatry Hour, WMET 1160. Dr. Rosenthal, people with macular degeneration or retinitis pigmentosa, can they use light therapy safely?
No, is the simple answer. These degenerative conditions of the retina can be adversely affected by bright light. So if you have a retinal problem, please don't go rush out and get a light box. Check with your ophthalmologist first.
What if I have a family history of macular degeneration? Am I better off staying away from the light box?
In my opinion, that's not a strong enough reason not to use the lights, but it's still good to get it checked out beforehand.
And maybe have yearly checks, make sure that
would make
everything
sense.
Looks okay.
Yes.
Are there any medications that increase the risk of side effects or down side effects from light therapy?
Well, the one thing that I really would not now recommend using in conjunction with light therapy is St. John's wort. It's a major photosensitizer. It sensitizes tissues to the effects of light. There are other drugs that can do this, can sensitize tissues to light, but in practice, there's no evidence that they have a bad effect if used along with light therapy.
Some of the antibiotics can cause skin sensitivity. Have you ever had any problem with that?
I have not, and the antidepressants also can be photosensitizers, but I have not had problems with that.
Are there any skin conditions that people say, eczema or psoriasis, for example, or anything that you would...
I would say the one skin condition to look out for is skin cancers, because a little bit of ultraviolet light does get through the filter. So I think that's definitely something to check with your dermatologist.
Okay. Well, this makes sense. As we know, anything that can help can also hurt. So it's very important to be thoughtful about this. Can light therapy be safe and useful in children and adolescents, or how about even infants?
Children and adolescents certainly can benefit, and we've actually done a study we've published in children and adolescents who had a combination of early morning light in before they woke up plus afternoon light therapy. Infants I would be really careful of because their eyes are very, very sensitive, so I would not expose them to the intensity of a light box.
There are some people who have dysautonomias, meaning their autonomic nervous system, their parasympathetic, sympathetic nervous system that controls the nervous function in the body, where there's an imbalance between the two. People like that could be more sensitive to the light box. Have you had
you
that
know,
problem?
I have no experience with that. It's a fascinating question. I can't speak to that.
Okay. We're talking with Dr. Norman Rosenthal on the Whole Psychiatry Hour, WMET 1160 AM. Dr. Rosenthal, would you say that a Dawn simulator is something that people should use really kind of as a baseline approach for most people?
I think if you're going to buy one device, get the light box and get a timer on your bedside lamp. I think your money is better spent that way than the more expensive Dawn simulator.
Okay.
If you want to go with a sort of Cadillac regimen, then go with the Dawn simulator and the light box.
So a practical question, do insurance companies cover this?
It's getting better. It's variable. Some will, and they should, because not only is it a medical necessity, but it's also a money saver for them. It cuts down on doctor's visits, it cuts down on drug costs, et cetera, et cetera. But I think you have to check it out case by case.
Okay. What's the roughly, what would the cost be for a light box?
It's about between $300 and $400. Incidentally, I have in my book a letter to the insurance company, a model letter that has worked for some people.
Okay, that's excellent. Now, let's say you're one of the 40% of people who don't get full benefit from the light therapy. What are the alternatives that you can do? Could you move to Florida?
Certainly, and some of my patients have. Antidepressants can be very useful, either once the symptoms have set in or even ahead of time. We've just been involved in a huge multi-center study of the antidepressant Wellbutrin, XL, which we started at the beginning of autumn before symptoms developed, and in fact found that in 50% of people who would have relapsed, it prevented the relapse. But all kinds of antidepressants can be used. Don't forget, exercise is wonderful. I know you're the whole psychiatry, so we need to think of all of the options.
Right.
Exercise often in conjunction with light, so you can exercise on your stationary bike, for example, in front of a light box, or you can just go walk out on a bright winter day.
Let me ask you this. Let's say I'm using light therapy, so I'm having some impact on my neurotransmitter, serotonin, et cetera. Am I likely to need a lower dosage of medication?
Definitely. The light therapy enables you to get away with less medication. And as a matter of fact, when spring comes, you find you have to cut back on the medication and sometimes discontinue it altogether.
So that's excellent because that means fewer side effects.
Exactly.
Less money spent on medication, mm-hmm. fewer sexual side effects. So light therapy as an adjunct, even for routine depression,
should be used much more than what it's being used right now.
That's excellent. So let's talk a little bit about, in our time remaining, we're talking with Dr. Norman Rosenthal, author of Winter Blues on WMET 1160, the Whole Psychiatry Hour. Let's talk quickly, in our 2 minutes remaining, about the diet that you recommend for people who have SAD.
Well, people with SAD are going to crave carbohydrates, and the purer the carbohydrate, the better. It's like you almost feel like a cocaine addict going for your fix every time you pop a cookie or a donut or whatever. And I used to think that, you know, if it's going to give you energy, because we studied it and it actually energizes you in the short run, I used to think, well, why not eat little bits of carbohydrate through the day? But that's actually a very bad principle because you get the energy, but then you get the backlash as you feel logy and sluggish after the carbohydrate wears off. In practice, I recommend now that people avoid the pure carbohydrates, go with protein and complex carbohydrates, and that way you stabilize your blood sugar and the energy overall is at a better level.
I think that's excellent advice. Thanks so much for being with us, Dr. Norman Rosenthal, author of Winter Blues. So that's it for today's Whole Psychiatry Hour here on WMET 1160 AM. Remember, you can contact me at wholepsych.com. You can check out our archive shows. Many of these shows have lots of information, need to be listened to more than once. Next week, I think we are going to revisit EMDR. We're going to talk with Dr. Brad Wasserman, a clinician, to get a closer look at EMDR from someone who works with EMDR and real-life problems. This is your host, Dr. Hedaya, reminding you to trust your body and your mind's instinct towards balance and health. Remain focused on your goals, not your obstacles, and your goals will be yours. And finally, remember, if you're suffering from a mental health problem, think out of the box.
Medical advice, opinions, and the references cited are for information only and are not intended to diagnose or prescribe. For your specific diagnosis and treatment, consult your personal doctor or healthcare provider.